Nice to hear her again.
Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely.
Working in a coal mine, going down. Working in a coal mine, about to slip down. Working in a coal mine, going down. Working in a coal mine, about to slip down.
5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone. Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
Daddy, working in a coal mine, going down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine, going down. Working in a coal mine.
And that, of course, is the great Lee Dorsey doing Working in a Coal Mine, and we are going to be going down, spelunking down the cavern today, talking about one of my favorite musicians and his musical evolution. That would be Stuart Copeland, best known as the drummer for The Police. And with me today, in my general role on Sundays, is TC. And TC, we don't have a clip, but I just want to say two words to you. Well, actually, more than that. Fuck you. You're going to go see George Clinton. You son of a bitch.
Yeah, and the bonus of Fishbone opening up.
Oh,
so that'll be Tuesday night.
I would love to see that. Good God.
That'll be Tuesday night. Yeah, I told you, that set me back a whole $25, you know, so.
God.
We got that going for us. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
How could you pass that one up?
You can't.
It's just, and, you know, it's funny because right now there's a thing going on in Pittsburgh. Well, actually, you know, opinions are flying around because Guns N' Roses played here last night. And I think they're here tonight or tomorrow night, too. But anyways, they said Axl Rose just absolutely sucks now. Can't hit any of the notes he used to hit. All this. He's out there just sucking paychecks, you know. I mean, he doesn't retire. So I'm interested to see what George Clinton brings to the stage, which I think George Clinton is the kind of guy that if he couldn't do it anymore, he wouldn't. Yeah.
Well, also, he's always dependent on his musicians and featured them.
Yeah.
You know, he gets the best people.
Well, you know, a point I made on Facebook about the article, you know, the review from the show, was a couple of years ago I saw Phil Collins. It was sad to see him barely be able to walk. Can't play drums anymore. He'd sit on a stool the whole time. But, man, he could still hit the notes. He could still sing the songs. So I gave him that. Now this other guy, come on, give it up.
You're just
pissing off your fan. Your loyal fans from back in the day that came to see you, they're going to remember you this way. Yeah. It's kind of like a couple of weeks ago when I saw Loverboy and Foreigner. And they're just both surprisingly good. But I'm sitting there watching the singer from Loverboy, who used to have the big hair and wear the spandex. Now he's this old guy with gray hair wearing blue jeans. Yeah. But he can still belt the songs. So
absolutely.
It's pretty crazy. You know, you got image that could be the problem. But, yeah, I'm excited about that. We'll talk about my YouTube videos later, but I'm sure I'm going to shoot a lot of those. But tonight's Stuart Copeland night. We need
absolutely.
To talk about him.
And we're
going to
get right into it. So we will talk to you later in the show. But sit back and enjoy, or put your earplugs on if you need to when the opera comes on. All right? Fair enough.
I'm all right. I can live through it.
All right, talk
to you in a bit.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Stuart Copeland. Copeland was born in Alexandria, Virginia. His father was a jazz musician, but also a CIA agent. And immediately after being born, they moved to Cairo and then to Beirut, Lebanon, where he spent 18 years in Beirut learning instruments. First instrument he ever played was a trombone, and he played guitar and then drums. And we'll talk about more of the interesting influences that type of music had on him. So he comes back to England, and he becomes the stage manager and roadie for a group called Curved Air, and fell in love with their singer and married her, and then became their drummer in 1975. And that's where we're going to start. This is Curved Air, and this is called Kids to Blame. This comes from 1976. Actually a pretty good song, okay? But if you notice, Stewart's in the background and not really just supporting. And so what happens from here is that the band is starting to dissolve, or at the verge of it. They're at a particular club, and he sees Sting as the bass player. And a couple of days later, Andy Summers comes in and they're starting to jam. And they start to form the Police. However, at this time, Stuart Copeland was also doing his own recording under a fake name by the name of Clark Kent. And would you believe that Clark Kent actually had a top 40 hit in England before the Police? And they were on top of the Pops. So he grabbed Summers and that. They all wore masks. And they did this song, On Top of the Pops. And this is Away From Home by Clark Kent, otherwise known as Stuart Copeland. Monty Python would say, Camelot, that is the silly place. And yes, we have a silly song from Stuart Copeland hitting the top 40. Now, at this point, the Police are starting to tour locally. And we're going to hear actually three songs from the Police in a row. And the first one was the first single that came out on a label that actually Stuart Copeland and his brother Miles, who started IRS Records, by the way, and was managing the band at this time, they put out 5,000 copies of a song called Fallout. And that's what we're going to start with, and then we have two songs afterwards, and I'll talk about those. But these are three songs by the Police, starting with Fallout. So, of course, that was Walking on the Moon. And previous to that, we did, we heard Does Everybody Stare? Does Everyone Stare? And that particular song, Does Everyone Stare, was written by Stuart Copeland. If you notice at the beginning of that song, there's that piano thing. And, of course, piano is a percussion instrument. So that's all him doing that. He also, what little horns you heard at the beginning was him playing the horns. Okay, and he also arranged that particular tune with the vocal trio and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's all sort of Copeland. But it's the next song, of course, Walking on the Moon, that turned me into a huge fan of Stuart Copeland. And there's a story about this. So I was watching TV, and this is before MTV. But before MTV, there was a thing called Elephant Parts. Elephant Parts was a show that was produced by Michael Nesmith of the Monkees. And it was the first show, it was an hour long, that featured musical videos. And I saw the video to this on Elephant Parts and listened to the song, and I was blown away. The song's a great song. But I'm telling you right now, it's Stuart Copeland that makes that song so much better, because the drum part of that is so subtle and so strange. And there's a part in there near the end where he's doing five on the bass drum, four on the snare drum, and three on a hi-hat. That's physically impossible, I thought. And I found out later it was, because he used repeaters to make that section, something that he designed. I didn't find that out until about a year ago. But all of that work that he did to make that drum part so unusual is what really brings that song out. And the other thing I do have to say about the Police, my sister and I, who was older and who has now passed away, Mary loved the Police also, but she was a Sting person. I was immediately Stuart Copeland. So we would argue incessantly, and it was wonderful, and I do miss her very much. So just wanted to give a shout-out to my sister. So from here, he gets a phone call from Francis Ford Coppola, and he says, hey, would you be interested in doing music for a film? And we're having auditions, and come in and play some of your stuff. And he basically, while everyone else was talking, he went into the studio, recorded stuff, impressed Francis Ford Coppola, and did his first film score for The Outsiders. And in it, there's a song that's featured in the credits called Don't Box Me In. He worked together with Stan Ridgway of Wall View Voodoo, and they did this song, and this was featured on his first film score for The Outsiders. This is Don't Box Me In by Stuart Copeland and Stan Ridgway.
Bang!
You listen very closely, you can hear him dealing with the closed hi-hat there at the end of this song. So that was for the Outsiders. Now, at this point, I'm in New York City, and I go to my local theater at the King's Crossing to see Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. And I like it better than the original because it's weirder and it's funnier and so on and so forth. And at the end of the movie, this song plays. And guess what? I get up and dance to it, and everybody is more scared of that than they are of the film. So this is Strange Things Happen. This was the end song during the credits of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and it's a beauty. So here we go. Stuart Copeland, Strange Things Happen.
Thank you.
Okay, and that was Strange Things Happen. Now, as you listen to Stewart's music, you'll notice that it is very, very rhythmically driven. Okay? He's a percussionist, so he thinks in terms of rhythms and how they interconnect, what he can do to change them so that it flows very well. Now, the next song we have, I'm skipping a little bit in time frame here, because he did numerous TV shows and also other movies and such. And then he spent like 20 years doing this. And I'm going to be doing a particular piece called Green Fingers. This is from the soundtrack to The Equalizer, which was an 80s show with Edward Woodward. And he would do each show, he would put new music on. Okay, so it's not like you're doing something and you have a lot of time to do it. He had to think up new music very quickly. And this is probably my favorite thing off the soundtrack. And this is for piano, and he re-recorded several parts of it together, and you'll hear it. I wish they would publish this in a piano duet, because I'd do this in a heartbeat. This is called Green Fingers, all on piano, by Stewart Copeland. And that was Green Fingers. And that, to me, is his Aaron Copland phase. I mean, that is so American in sound, and so much reminds me of Aaron Copland, with the exception of that's extremely complex rhythmically. And you can hear that and feel that all the way through. Now, during this time, too, he was basically approached by producers and invited to go to Africa to you know, find rhythm and find the music for Africa, because it all comes from Africa. And so he did. And the film was called The Rhythmatist, and they put out an album. And this is a song from that called Koheita. So this is Stuart Copeland doing African music with African musicians. And I'll tell you a little story about this afterwards. So you're hearing something completely different from Stuart Copeland. One of the things about this particular album, if you go on YouTube, you'll see a clip of him in a wire cage doing a drum solo with lions all around him. And I found this out today, that the producers of the film put meat around the cage, so that the lines would seem to be interested in the drumming. And suddenly he found them starting to attack the cage, and he literally basically attacked them with the snare drum by hitting it so hard and like did a quick solo and got the hell out of there. So I find that rather amusing. So at this point, he's doing all this composing, and the game company comes up to him and say, hey, would you like to compose a score for our game? And that, of course, is Spyro the Dragon. And so what we have here is we're going to talk a little bit. He's going to talk about what he had to do the composing, and then we're going to listen to the main theme. So this is Stuart Copeland talking about Spyro the Dragon.
Good. We have sound.
Step one is to beat the level. Now, for a 10-year-old kid, this is no problem. But for me, I have to beat the level and figure out the jumping, and I kind of navigate my way through the levels. In the very early stage, it's a lot of fun because I find a level that I can beat and get an attitude for it, and then create a piece of music for it. But then as the game progresses and I start getting to some of the more difficult levels and I'm stumped immediately, I've got to beat this bad guy before I can stay on that level for long enough to write a piece of music for it. So I have to learn how to beat all the bad guys. And if I was having to pay for my helpline, I'd be running up a huge tab here.
So in 2022, Stewart released all the music from all the games that he did, total four for Spyro the Dragon. And I think it runs over 4 hours long. It's a huge album. And that just gives you an idea of what he can do. Now, again, you're hearing a lot of rhythmic sense to the composition. And, you know, it's time maybe that he needs to stretch out a little bit. So he'd been doing a lot of recording of TV and such and games, and he was missing pop music. So he decided to form a band, and he formed a band with jazz bassist Stanley Clark and singer-songwriter Deborah Holland, and they formed Animal Logic in 1987. They recorded an album in 1989. They signed with IRS Records, which was headed by Copeland's brothers, Miles, and they're an interesting brand of music. Some pop, some jazz. You're going to hear a lot of influences here. And what you're hearing on this particular thing is a 2004 recording that they did at Copeland Studio. And we'll be hearing more about that later. And this was a song that Deborah Holland got for them. And they pulled it together in like three rehearsals. And so here we go with Animal Logic from Copeland's studio. And here we go. Just a moment here. I have to get back to the studio. And here we go. And there you go. Who's going to be the whipping boy by Animal Logic. Now, if you take a look at the video that's on YouTube for this, you'll notice that this is recorded in various stages. And they show it in terms of, you know, the different members playing different things at different times during the video that are in sync with the song. So just want to make it clear that not only is Stuart drumming on this, he's playing the piano. He and Deborah are doing the cello in it. There's a number of other things that are in there that they're doing, and it's a really good song, but it shows how he can arrange very quickly. This was done in a day. In a day. Okay, the song was brought in, and they decided how to do it, and they did it in a day. I think that's pretty amazing. Now, going on with some of the supergroups that Stuart has been in, we're going to give you some Oysterhead here. And this is the title track to their album, The Grand Pecking Order. And just so you know, what you have here is you've got Les Claypool, Primus, guitarist Trey Anastasio, Fish, and Stuart Copeland. Okay, and Claypool and Anastasio provide the vocals on this. And the band's eclectic sound has been called alt-funk fusion. So here we go with Oysterhead and The Grand Pecking Order. That probably is not TC's favorite song on the playlist. But for me, that's beautiful. I mean, that's just so odd and so strange. And yet I can connect to it, which, you know, to be honest, you know, with Primus and Les Claypool, it took me a while. But with Stuart Copeland's influence on that, I connected with it. And I connected with that whole album. So there's something to be said about that. Now, to appease TC, Now, if you remember, Taylor Hawkins passed away about a year ago, I guess, and TC did a whole show on Taylor Hawkins. And I'm going to bring TC in after these two things. So the first thing we're going to listen to is Stuart Copeland talking about Taylor. And then Taylor Hawkins and various musicians at the Sacred Grove, which is Stuart Copeland's studio. And so we're going to listen to this. I'll bring in TC after these two for briefly to talk a little bit about Taylor Hawkins. So here we go.
You were sort of a hero to Taylor.
We were heroes of each other, as a matter of fact. Also, chuckle buddies, mainly. But Taylor and also Dave have made being a fanboy cool.
Yeah.
It was never cool before, but I'd go hang out over at Taylor's place, and he would be wearing his police T-shirt,
which is
why I'm here today, wearing my Taylor T-shirt.
You became friends.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
And he became friends with all of his heroes, Roger Taylor, with Lars Ulrich, the guys in Rush. He was just a fanboy, but he rose to prominence himself as a hero himself.
As a drummer, what would you say about his drumming skills?
Power.
Yeah.
Power and enthusiasm and solidity.
What does it mean for you to be here?
Oh, it is very emotional to be here. And perhaps the most emotional moment of this whole thing, because we're all staying in one big hotel together and laughing up, talking about Taylor and, enjoying the brief time he was with us, all too brief. But the most emotional moment for me was at Soundcheck a couple days ago here, and to see young Shane Hawkins on the drums, I started crying.
Yeah.
He's got it. And he's got such power, enthusiasm.
Yeah.
He's got his father's stance, musical language. That was really emotional to see young Shane up there.
And that was Stuart Copeland and Taylor Hawkins at Sacred Grove. So, TC, you with us?
Yes, I'm right here.
Good. Yeah, gotcha.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about Taylor Hawkins and your connection and why that's important to you.
Well, I'm a huge Foo Fighters fan, and I've always been a fan of his. The whole story of how he played the Alanis Morissette stuff. And I'd really, what he did with Foo Fighters was wonderful. But I want to step back to that show I did, which was, 2 days after he died, I threw that together. Mm-hmm. And there's an interview in there with Taylor Hawkins, and he talked about what a great influence Stuart Copeland was and Roger Taylor from Queen. And he pretty much touched on the same thing that Stuart touched on in that interview, how he was kind of a fanboy, and when he first approached them, both of them, he's like, oh boy, I'm a fan, but they recognized what a great drummer he was. And that's why they became friends. I mean, if he was just some Joe off the street, they might have just said, oh yeah, thanks, bye. Here's an autograph. But they turned out to be very good friends, and Stuart Copeland and Roger Taylor was a huge, huge influence on Taylor Hawkins. You got to remember that Taylor Hawkins joined a band that was started by a drummer, and it was very intimidating for him that, here's the drummer from Nirvana hiring him to be a drummer. But Stuart Copeland and Roger Taylor really helped him see it through it and become his own man, become his own style and everything. So that was dead on. And I can just imagine the emotions watching Taylor's son Shane playing drums at that. And that interview, I believe, was from that tribute concert they had. It must have been. He was talking about being there in the hotel and everything. So, man, good stuff. Keep it going, man. I'm loving this show.
Oh, I will. We'll have you back at the end here to talk about things.
Okay, sounds good.
So, cool.
Oh,
so
by
at this
way,
point.
By the way.
Oh, yeah,
by
go
the
for
way,
it.
I didn't really hate that song, but I'm so glad I don't have to listen to it again. Okay. I didn't hate it.
See, I all this planned. I knew you wouldn't like that song, so I decided to do something you would like. See, I think of you.
Well, the thing I don't like about it is I'm not a Fish fan. I'm not really into them. I appreciate that their talent. And Incubus, same way. So, maybe that has something to do with Stuart Copeland made it bearable.
And there you
okay,
go.
Keep
that,
going.
That's a reason. That actually is the reason I like Horsehead is his
there you
influence.
Go. Yep. Okay. Keep it rolling, man.
Okay.
Talk to you at the end.
All right. So at this point, we've been talking about his drumming skills, also his compositional skills in terms of TV and so on and so forth. But then we have to get into orchestration. And so there was an album that came out called Orchestrally. It came out in 2005, where he took a number of his songs and orchestrated them. And what we have here from this album, 2005, is his orchestration of the Equalizer theme. Don't think that we weren't going to play this, okay, some form of the Equalizer's name, because it's, to me, the best TV theme ever, seriously. And this is the orchestral version that was arranged by Stuart Copeland of the Equalizer's theme in 2005. Here we go. And that was live, of course, in front of an audience with Copeland conducting. Notice also the arrangement, the steel drums, the piano, still very, very much influenced and directed by percussion instruments, and yet completely different than the computer score that he did for the original Equalizer theme in 1985. So here we're going to move on to an album that came out the same year. And by the way, I was wrong with the year. It was 2004, not 2005. Forgive me. And that would be La Notte della Taranta, The Night in Taranta, which is a group of Italian musicians. And from here, he would meet one of his people that have influenced him very much. But this was the first meeting. He was brought in to accompany and also compose for this particular album. And this was also done live in Italy. I think it was Milan. And I'm not sure about that, so don't quote me. But here we go with Mena Manamo from La Notte della Taranta.
Oh, God.
And that's Menomenomo from La Notte dell'Atalanta. So we're going to skip ahead a little bit here and feature his last supergroup, which is called Gizmodrome. And Gizmodrome, so one of the musicians from dell'Atalanta was a gentleman by the name of Vittorio Cosma. And with Vittorio and bassist Mark King and guitarist Adrian Ballou, who of course played for Zappa and King Crimson, Talking Heads, David Bowie, and on, they formed this group called Gizmodrome. And again, we got something very unique here. And this is a song from their album called Zombies in the Mall. And yes, it is a definite nod to George Romero and Dawn of the Dead. So here you go, Zombies in the Mall.
Raccoons are gonna break every rule, and the damn rats, of course, are just shitting everywhere.
And the scorpions are climbing up the pipes, but I don't mind. Take your time, got no dime, here's mine.
Thank you. thing you can say is that Stuart Copeland is not exactly a vocalist, but the interesting thing, what he does with his vocals, it's rhythmic, and it's off kilter, but it's still rhythmic. You listen to that again and go back to that song, and you can find it on YouTube. It's very unique what he's doing there. There's lots of structure behind what he's doing, and it's there, and it's in the rhythm of how he speaks. It's called Sprechstimme. So just wanted to bring that out a little bit. Now, we're talking about composition, and one of the things back in the late 80s, early 90s, I think it was actually 90, he was commissioned by the Cleveland Orchestra to do an opera. He's now done five. And I went to that, and I'll give you the name of that later, but because I got to remember it. But he talks about what the difference is between rock musicians and orchestral musicians. And I want you to listen to that here. This is Stuart Copeland speaking.
35-minute score for full orchestra is a lot of dots on the page. And the guys who started their music career doing that, there are two kinds of musicians in the world, musicians of the eye, musicians of the ear. We all are musicians of the ear. You're probably Reed batshit. You're probably both. But, yes. I mean, you connect with the music with your ear, even you. Even though you can read.
Read some black shit.
Yeah. We connect. We know when 16 bars are. We connect. We can start, and then we connect. But the orchestral players are musicians of the eye. Their music, they don't compose. They don't improvise. They don't jam. Their mission, their vocation, is to take that Mahler, that Mozart, that Beethoven, and faithfully obey the page. Because if I play my piccolo part or my part perfectly, that guy who's 20 feet away, I don't even know what he's playing. I can only see my part. I can't see his part. But if I obey and he obeys, then we together are the mighty Dallas Symphony. And that's where their pride is, that we, as 60 people, 80 people, are one thing that plays. And so their devotion to the page, to what their eye tells them, they connect, and their sense of time comes from the visual cue of the baton. They are all visual. And so you have to make that page very instructive. To make music come out of a speaker, you get it to sound nice. You just tweak the sound. You make the drums louder. That always works. And it's, it sounds great. We're done. To put it on the page, I have to look at it and say that violin part goes da 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 da, or is it da 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 da? And I, because I'm not hearing it, I'm looking at it. And it's a relatively new discipline for me. I studied music as a kid, but as soon as I became a rock musician, I didn't see a page of music for 20 years. Until I got back into film composing, or I started film, and Francis Coppola turns around and says, I think we need strings. And I said, yep, absolutely, strings. Hire me some strings. How many strings is strings?
But, how many strings?
And then when the strings show up and I have it on the chart, a badly written score without enough information, but they get it right away.
Yeah.
Without with a band, with rock musicians of the ear, you have to explain it. You rehearse for 2 weeks with an orchestra. They get it
right away. What they do,
and it's better the second time because now they're feeling it. But creating that the biggest challenge was creating a visual representation of the music, an instruction for each guy. All those booklets go out. Okay, the violin players all get the same book, and the viola players get the same book, and but all those books created with the right information that is complementary. Let's see. Okay, the clarinet part. Should they both be playing, or should we just go down to one clarinet for that? Because he's supported by then balancing the forces. Oh, my God, you're not listening to it. Well, if you're doing the faders, you're done. But if you're doing it in your mind, to get it right, and the confidence factor slows you down. And I've been doing this for some years now, so I think I got it more or less together. But it still takes me a lot longer than that kid out of music school who's been only doing that. That kid out of music school cannot rock. But he'll be quicker at producing that score.
There you go. That gives you an idea of the difference between musicians of the ear and musicians of the eye. I'm a musician of the eye. I need some sort of guidepost, even if it's a chord progression or something, so that I know I'm right in there. Or I need something written out. And there's a real difference with that. Now, that being said, we're going to go on to an excerpt of his 35-minute opera on Edgar Allan Poe's Cask of Amontillado. And this will give you an idea of him coming into the classical world. He's written five operas. He's done a concerto, which actually is called Tyrant's Fall, which was produced and commissioned by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. And various other things. He's got a concerto for percussion that just premiered a couple of years ago with the London Symphony. But he's now definitely in the classical realm, much like Frank Zappa is. And I'll talk a little bit about that at the end, why I connect to both musicians quite well. But this is Cask of Amontillado. Now, I've never seen that particular opera, but definitely want to. And, of course, that's if you know the story from Poe, it's a gentleman who hates this other gentleman who lures him into an area for this cask of Amontillado and then basically walls him up to die. So there you go. That's what the cask of Amontillado is about. Now, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, Stuart Copeland took the silent film of Ben-Hur and wrote a whole score for it. And there is actually an album out there, but there's no, that's not on YouTube, because all classical music is basically copyright, and so they will only release certain things. But luckily, there is a section of this that is valuable on YouTube that we were able to record. And this is the Chariot Race. This is new music he composed for the silent film version. You can watch this on YouTube, and it really works well with the footage. And so here we have The Race from Ben-Hur, composed by Stuart Copeland. Then the race is over and Ben-Hur won. Yes. So that was 2017. So lately, what has he been doing? Well, he's got another opera out there. And this is called Electric Saint. And this is just a teaser from just a little bit of music from it. And this premiered on September 5th, 2021. And this was with a libretto from Jonathan Moore, and it premiered at the National Theater of Weimar in Germany. So this is Electric Saint. And here we go. And so a little taste of Electric Saint. I would love to hear that. And I love Nikola Tesla. For those of you that don't know who he is, he was one of our great scientists and developed direct current. And just a real, real interesting character, and unfortunately died penniless, but a great... great mind behind that. So that I'm very interested in. So this year, 2023, Stuart Copeland won a Grammy, his sixth, for Best Immersive Album. And this is an album that he did with Richie Kej. Richie Kej is a Himalayan musician. And this is from the album Divine Tides. And as I said, it won the Grammy Award for in the category of Best Immersive Audio Album. This is Richie Kej and Stuart Copeland from Divine Tides. And this is called The Himalayas. Well, that took you to a different part of the country, of the world, and of course the Himalayas. You could see that Stuart has a great love and respect for different types of music. Also, as far as the drumming, if you can consider this and this, it's very subtle. That's one of Stuart's basic. He's basically subtle, even though he can be over the top too, but. You got to listen because he does little things that you don't hear unless you listen. And to me, that makes him one of the most unique drummers out there. So we're at the end of our music almost. And this year, in 2023, he just released an album called The Police Deranged for Orchestra. So what he has done is taken all the Police songs and rethought them and redid them in a different way. Now, I am talking to TC before the show. This is not his favorite song, so I apologize, TC. He doesn't like this arrangement. I love it. It is very unusual. I think you'll enjoy it. And this is Roxanne by The Police from the album The Police Deranged by Stuart Copeland. One thing you can say, you've never heard Roxanne played like that before. Have you, TC?
Well, another song I'll have to listen to again. But I got to tell you, though, you know, I did all your engineering work on this, all the studio work and everything, and you sent me a list of songs. Now, when I was doing your show and converting all the music and getting ready for the studio, I was having computer issues. My fucking mouse wasn't working right. All sorts of bad shit going on. The thing on my back that I got to have removed, everything. So when I was listening to the songs, I might have not been in the right frame of mind. Not only that, but listening to them again and you explaining where they came from, you know, how they were created, why they were created, gave every song a purpose. And now it all ties in, and now it all makes sense. You know, I mean, if you think about it, if you're not really, I mean, I love Stuart Copeland, but if you're not a big fan, don't follow his whole career. All the shit you sent me, you know, like I called it crap. Everything you sent me, I'm like, what the hell is this? But once we did the show and I listened to the whole show and listened to you explain it all, now it all makes sense. And it was a great,
it's the evolution,
great show.
What I called it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, it's a great, great show. You did your homework on this one, my friend. You definitely did. Let's go.
And, all right, and the whole point of it was to show where he started and where he ended, and that
right.
He's going to continue doing things differently. He thinks differently.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I talked a little bit about my sister and I. She loves Sting, and this is nothing against Sting, but they're two, you know, when the Police were together, they're two alphas. Basically, when it came to the music, they were fighting constantly, and Andy Summers was off. And so they went their own way. And to me, Stewart is more interesting for me. And that's nothing to say against Sting and what he's done, because he's done, you know, the John Dowland songs. He's definitely branched out quite a bit, too. But
Andy Summers is touring with the symphony right now. Summers is our friend Brian Hanna told me that just a few minutes ago, that Andy Summers is out touring with the symphony. So, yeah, everybody went their own way. And Stuart Copeland just showed the diversity. Now, there is one thing that you and I wanted to talk about real quick, because you're running out of time.
We may go over time. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. But the two kinds of musicians that Stuart Copeland was talking about, and you said you're a musician by eye, musician by ear. And let me tell you that little story about Bradford. When I was living up near there, I was in Great Valley, New York, actually. I came to Bradford to meet up with Augie Frieda, who plays guitar. He was in town. And we all met at the corner bar, and then John Reimer was there. He plays drums. We started bullshitting about, like, hey, we can really have a jam session here. It's Augie on guitar, John on drums, me on bass. And Amy Bromley was there. And Amy is probably one of the most talented people that you and I ever know. She played piano.
And a pianist.
In Dallas Central, New York. Huh?
No. Yeah, pianist in Dallas Symphony Orchestra. I was just going to go there.
Yeah, Dallas Symphony Orchestra and everything. And she's just, you know, phenomenal. So I said to Amy, I said, hey, how about, you know, you could jam with us. You could play the piano. She goes, I can't do that. What do you mean? You concert pianist. She goes, I can't jam. I have to have music in front of me. You put anything in front of me and I'll play it like it's, you know, I'm the best it's ever played, but I can't sit down and play Honky Tonk or something like that. Exactly what you were talking about. And when Stuart Copeland, I always wondered about that. That's always been on my back of mind. What do you mean you can't jam? And when Stuart Copeland explained that, that really hit with me. That resonated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I put that in, because he is of both. You know, he had to learn that. He had to learn to be a musician of the eye. It's a whole different thing. You know, I'm a musician of the eye. I play with music in front of me. If I have something in front of me, I can do a little bit of improv. Or if I have a chord progression, I can do an improv. But I need something. I need something in front of me. So there you go. So tell us, TC, what you're doing tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow?
Tomorrow we're going, we're kind of going silent as far as vocals go. Rock This Town Radio, TC, at 8 o'clock tomorrow night here on the Deviant Legion Network. No words necessary. I'm going to have 18 of my favorite instrumental songs playing, and hopefully by the end of this show, they're your favorites too. But, I go back, you know, to the 50s, right up until basically today. So you'll love this. And, you know, the thing about it is you listen to a song, you listen to the lyrics, and it can take you places, yes. But the beauty about instrumentals, and I always thought this, was they don't lay it out for you. You make your own journey out of that song, and it takes you wherever you go. Like, the titles basically mean nothing. Like, spoiler alert, I got Allman Brothers' Jessica on there. Well, when Dickie Betts wrote it, he named it after his infant daughter, Jessica. And that's where the name came from, so... Don't pay attention to the names whatsoever. It's the content of the music. And there's some beautiful ones in there. Santana Moonflower, John Lutati, Gardens, Babylon. Good show. Tune in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so going on into what we call housekeeping here, the first thing I have to do is announce that we have a contest going on until September 16th. Partnering with Ice Creams. It's posted at Film and Stuff. You can become a member there, or just check it out there, or check it out at my thing, or at Deviant Legion. And basically, there's a new movie out called Babylon 5, The Road Home, and is animated. And we have 10 copies to give away. And basically, you come up with an exciting title for a new Babylon TV movie, and you write a one- or two-sentence sizzle description you like to see on TV Guide. You can either put it, if you're listening to Deviant Legion, you can just send it to our email, which is Deviant Legion, and that's DeviantLegion @gmail.com. And just include your name, address, and phone number. And the top 10 people that do this will get a free copy of the movie. And myself and Vicki Love will be judging the entrants that come into Deviant Legion. So that's our contest. Now, as far as Monday is concerned, let me get back here momentarily. So Monday we have something we have a gentleman that I've been trying to get in for over 3 years. He's a film director. His name is Mark Manos. And he wrote and directed a film in 1991, which I consider one of the most audacious, strange, and wonderful movies I've ever seen. It's called Liquid Dreams. And basically think Cinemax After Dark, Murder Mystery, and Videodrome, all put into one. That'll give you an idea. It's odd. It's strange. It's audacious. But also Mark is going to be talking to us about a friend of his who just passed away, and her name was Sinead O'Connor. And, of course, she was the Irish singer who just passed away a couple weeks ago. So we have that on Monday. On Tuesday, Rachel and I will be back with our final summer movie commentary watch of the season, and we're going to be doing Tremors. And so we have other things planned. I know we're going to get Joe Badon back on. That was canceled. We're also going to get Keenan Walker back on. And we have someone else that just came in that will be on a week from this coming Monday, the 28th. His name is Trevor. He's directed a couple of films, and we'll talk about that. But I'll give you more information about that later in the week. So that's what we have so far. So that's what we've got. PC, why don't you talk about your video YouTube channel and, again, remind people who you're going to see on Tuesday.
Hey, Carl. Guess who I'm going to see Tuesday?
I know, you
guess
son of a bitch motherfucker. Yeah, it's good. George Clinton,
Fishbone,
motherfucker. Yep.
Fishbone, opening for George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. And the next night on Wednesday, I'm going to see a band called The Baseball Project. And it's made up of REM members, Mike Mills, Peter Buck, another guy that toured with them a lot, a female singer that worked with them a lot. And they do a lot of songs about baseball. They got one called Ted Fucking Williams. And they got one called The Night Doc.
I listened to the one about Harvey Haddix.
Did you? Okay. They had the one about Doc, The Night Doc threw at everybody's head. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see these guys. So that'll be Wednesday night. And, of course, I'll be shooting video, and I'll have them on my YouTube channel. TCC77. I have 344 videos I've shot at shows around the country. And then a week from Tuesday, I'm going to see Train. That's an annual trip for me in Dayton, Ohio. So that's how I'm ending my month. So there you go. Did I mention Tuesday I'm going to see George Clinton? Did I mention that to you? Tuesday, what I'm doing Tuesday? I don't think I really told you about that.
Be quiet now. It's time to be quiet and leave.
Oh, now I shut up, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Carl, great show tonight. Great show. If you weren't a Stuart Copeland fan before, you are now. And if you only knew him as police drummer, oh, boy, that's only scratching the surface of that guy. So he did a wonderful job. And I was proud
Thank
to be
you.
Part
I appreciate
of that.
It. It was a lot of work, I'll tell you.
Oh, it was a lot of work, and it was a lot of work on both our ends. Well, you know,
absolutely.
Tuesday
Listen,
night,
I appreciate
I'm
everything
Tuesday
you do
night.
For me, man.
Yeah, Tuesday night when I'm enjoying George Clinton in Parliament Funkadelic, I'll think of you.
Yeah?
No, I won't.
Yes, you will. Because I'll make you
okay,
a fucking call during the show.
All right. So we'll see you tomorrow night, right?
All right. Well, I'll be there tomorrow night. Folks, thank you very much for listening. Really appreciate it. And shall we say good night and leaving the cavern. All right. Here we go. Leaving the cavern.
Bye, guys.
All right. See you later, CC.
Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to slip down. Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to slip down.
5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone. Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
Dada, working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop. About to slip down,
working
in a coal mine, going down, 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 working in a coal mine. Ooh, about to slip down.
Good night, everyone.